Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv Khanna for immigration.com. We are doing a community conference call as we usually do every other Thursday. Today is Thursday, January 21st. We have a bunch of questions that we want to talk about, but let me start with a couple of warnings to people. This call is being recorded, so if you don't wish your voice to be recorded, hang up now. It will be a good idea if you talk with me. You can conceal your identity. There is no need to announce who you are to the world. Maintain your privacy. Just because we are doing this phone call doesn't mean that you have become our clients or we have become your lawyers. This is a courtesy call, purely for informational purposes. Keep all this in mind. With that said, I want to open today's conference call with some preliminary issues that deal with the January 8th memorandum from USCIS. The bottom line of that memorandum is this. Unless the employer can demonstrate that they actually control the employee, it would be difficult for them to get an H-1 approval. What is more disturbing is the same applies even to H-1 extensions, which means if an employer is not able to demonstrate that they were maintaining control of the employee all through, they could have a difficulty. They could have difficulty getting an extension. I find that to be very disturbing, and I think it's going to be open to a legal challenge. Question is, do I do it? Our firm does it, or we collaborate with some other law firms to do it. Eventually, this is going to court. I can see that already. I have drafted a letter to INS, which I intend to send out over the next week or so, pointing out why this entire position needs to be reconsidered. In my view, this position is illegal. It is contrary to all previous precedents because under their own regulations, the definition of control or employer-employee relationship is not what they purport it to be. They are trying to bring in common law and all these other bodies of law, which is, in my view, illegal. And I hope to make my case before a court. I don't need to make a case before INS. If they don't back off this position, eventually we'll take it to court, and then we'll see what a judge has to say about it. I'm frankly very disturbed by this memorandum. I feel it's like here you are, if you are driving on a road 55 miles an hour for 5 years, all of a sudden government wakes up and says, no, 55 miles an hour is illegal, and it was illegal 3 years ago. We are going to fine you for the last 3 years. So all through this time, you were obeying the law, thinking you're obeying the law. Then they come in and they change the rules of the game, and they apply the law retroactively. On top of that, I have heard and I have actually spoken with one of the employers whose employee was turned away at the JFK airport. They were told that, you know, you can't come in because you don't have an employer-employee relationship. This happened, I think, about a week ago. And I have the transcript of that conversation. I have advised this employer to take this case to court as well. First, we will go to CBP and try to get it resolved because the kind of questions they asked and the kind of intimidation they showed towards this employee was absolutely reminiscent of Nazi Germany. And I told him, I said, this reminds me of the times when India was under the British rule. We are slaves yet once again. And the reason we are slaves is because we let people do that. Government gets away with murder simply because you are, or we are, the weakest part of this entire chain of visitors to this country. We don't raise the voice, so we become weak. I don't mind if they change the laws. I have no problem with that. I live in this country. I'm a citizen of this country. I will obey every single law of this country. But I think this country was founded on the principles of freedom. As long as everybody is obeying the law, of course, if somebody's not obeying the law, throw the book at them. But if they are obeying the law, treat them with respect. I'm going to insist on this fact. I do not insist on laws being a certain way. Laws are what they are. But you've got to treat people with respect. You can't just treat people like trash and turn them away at the border, intimidating them, and, this is absolutely ridiculous. So we're going to do something about it. I'm trying to get people together. We have created a forum for employers only, trying to get all the employers together. Membership is by invitation only. If your employers want to be a member, tell them to go ahead and send me an email with their introduction, who they are. If we know them personally, no problem. If we don't know them personally, we'll figure out who they are and if, you know, they are employers who are, you know, interested in becoming members, we will include them. Now, the question is, what do we do with this memorandum? Well, first of all, anybody who does not have to travel or go for a visa stamping or go for an extension or go for a H-1 visa renewal at this time, wait. Wait for a month, couple of months. I want to see what INS does with this memorandum. Okay. But if you cannot wait, then at the very least, make sure you have some documentation that shows your employer is actually controlling you. This is a very vague term, and like I said, USCIS's entire approach to this, in my view, is illegal. There are two things wrong with this memorandum, fundamentally wrong. There's a bunch of things wrong. One is that they are misapplying the law, and two, and that they are applying the law retroactively almost to extension cases. I find that to be ridiculous. Nevertheless, we'll see. Like I said, I'll make my case before the court, and the government will make their court case before the court, and we'll see what they have to say. With that said, let me open the floor. There were some questions on H-1, this memorandum. I want to see if anybody's on the phone right now who wants to discuss this issue further. I'll take this issue for the next 5 to 10 minutes, and then I'll delve into the conference, and we'll start talking about the questions that have been posted. I'm sorry that I'm changing the format, but I think it's an important issue, and I did not want people to have to listen to the entire conference to get to this issue. A lot of people might want to listen to this particular one. Hang on 1 second. Let me put us in question and answer mode. You can press *6 to discuss the memo with me, please. *6.
Hello, Roger.
Yes, sir.
Okay. I just talked with you about to post, but I wasn't able to post. And as you said, wait for a couple of months to resolve this issue, because I have the appointment with the consulate Mexico on this Monday, and I am traveling by car from Sunday.
I would advise you to cancel that appointment if you can. Look, if you are working directly for an in-house employer where your project is in-house, I don't see any problem.
No. I'm working client side, and there is
right.
The one preferred vendor, and then my employer is there.
Right. If you're working at a client side, you could have issues demonstrating that the employer has control. So I would want you to, if possible, delay your travel until we have sort of seen the dust.
Because I spoke with the other guy who interviewed on this last Tuesday, 19th, and he doesn't have any, he didn't get any problems, so that's why I don't know.
Well, if you want to go ahead, people have two opinions. I got a phone call from one of our clients. One of them said, they said, you know what, Rajiv, this is early enough that they may not have yet started reading up on the memo and started creating problems. Maybe if I go in early enough, I will not get into any trouble. And I think that's a good, valid point. I mean, at this point, it is common sense against law. And if your common sense says, I want to go early and give it a shot, go ahead. You know, go ahead.
Yeah, but you suggest wait for 1 month, right?
That's what I feel, that a few months, couple of months, maybe let's see the dust settle. Let us see if we end up filing a lawsuit or we can convince the government to reconsider their position. Because definitely this is illegal what they're doing. In my view, I've looked at the law. I'll look at the law some more. And if I feel that, no, they are right, of course, I have nothing to fight with them. And nor would I want to. If the law is properly being applied, I have no problem with it. Okay, then the only option we have is to approach Congress to change the law. But here the law is being misapplied.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else has any issues on this, or should we?
Yeah, Rajiv.
Yes, sir.
Rajiv. Yes, I am traveling to India in March and also trying to get a stamp, for the visa stamp, because it has been expired. But I do have a valid EAD, I-140 is approved, 485 is pending, and I also have a valid advance payroll. But for some reason, you know, everybody has been saying that, you know, if you maintain your H-1B status, that was more safer. So I was just planning to get
Let me correct you on two things.
Sure.
Number one, things have changed. If I were in your situation earlier, I would have said, yeah, go ahead and get your H-1 visa stamping and come back.
Okay.
Now, even if you get your H-1 visa stamping, let's look at your entire history because it's applicable to a lot of people. Let us say you go to India and you apply for your H-1 visa. There are two possibilities. Either you will get it or they'll postpone it, right?
Right.
They don't deny it usually right away. They kind of postpone it. Okay, so if they postpone it, you could always say, you know, heck, I'm just going back on my advanced parole. You can do that, right? You
right.
can come back on advanced parole.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. The other option is you get the H-1 visa. If you do get the H-1 visa stamping, you are going to have problems that, you know, the way we are seeing things happening, CBP at the border can again start creating problems for you. Does your employer have actual control over you, this and that? Now, my problem with this situation is this. Look, and the reason I'm upset with CBP is this. CBP is very poorly trained in law. These issues of actual control are issues that IRS has been struggling with for over 100 years. IRS is the first, as far as I know, first government body that had a lot of problem with how to define an employee and an independent contractor. Okay, and they are still having trouble with it. How is an officer who has a million other things to learn going to understand the nuances of employer-employee relationship? When, in my opinion, even the government is misapplying the law. So here's a CBP officer who leans on you and says, if you don't withdraw your application for admission, I could formally exclude you, and if I exclude you, you can't come back for 5 years. Okay?
Okay.
What are you going to do? You're going to say, fine, okay, I'm going to go home.
Right.
All right? So I
right.
think, overall, it is like, so first thing is, even if you got the visa, I'm not happy with it. I would rather have you not apply for the H-1 visa and just
okay.
come back on advanced parole. Because even when you come back on advanced parole, under the Cronin Memorandum of a few years ago, almost a decade or two ago, under Cronin Memorandum, even if you enter on advanced parole, you are still considered to be on H-1.
Okay.
So there is no advantage in getting an H-1 visa stamping at this time.
Okay, so just go to India and come back on the advance parole. That's it, right?
That's what I would do, yes.
Okay, and it would not hurt the H-1 status. So I don't know why some of the lawyers, they just keep asking you to maintain H-1 status.
Well,
they know
a whole lot more than I do, or they know a whole lot less than I do. It's only one of them.
Right. No, I understand. Okay, all right. Well, we'll change the plans, and thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hey, this is Chirag. I just want to... I have a question related to the same discussion. I was on an India trip for 3 months, and day before yesterday, I landed to the Newark airport.
Okay.
And the CBP officer has asked so many questions regarding my employment because my actual client was in Dallas, Texas.
Okay.
So they just asked question almost about 5 years. Five hours, and then...
5 hours?
Yeah, and then finally, I mean, they checked out all my luggage and everything, and finally they couldn't able to make any decision on my case, so they issued the kind of the form saying the deferred inspection, order to appear for the deferred inspection.
Okay,
and
so basically what they're saying is, we'll let you in, but you have to come back and explain what's going on.
Right, on my I-94, they stamped like the parole for the 30 days. So next month I need to be appear on a local.
Even that is okay. At least you're in, okay, and you can take your lawyer with you when you go for the deferred inspection hearing.
Okay.
Okay, I'm okay with that. I don't see any problem with that. But when somebody just says, you know, withdraw this, or I'm going to turn you away, you know, I'm going to put you in the 5-year exclusion, I have a real problem with that.
Yeah. So I'm just wondering, like, what are the things I need to be take care of on that part, and how exactly I need to prove.
Basically, it is going to be an issue of who has the actual control, and I think you need to take your lawyers with you to the deferred inspection hearing, and let them deal with it.
Okay.
As long as you have the proper documentation, you should be okay.
Yeah, because I mean it's like I'm having H-1 on a consulting company, and the clients, but I do have a proper documentation saying that okay, these are the contract terms and these are the preferred vendors. So, and regarding the leave, I may get the document from my employer too, and even my clients has spoken with CBP officer. Probably that's the reason he allowed me to enter into this country.
Yeah, I think what you should do, Chirag, is keep me informed, if you will. You can go to immigration.com and through the contact us form, just send me an email. I don't want to give my email on open a conference. Just show me.
Sure.
Send me an email from there, and send me what happened. Tell me the details of what happened, what kind of questions they asked you, so we can kind of educate the community on what to look for.
Surely.
Okay. So go ahead and do that, and if there is any issue, you can always send me an email. If you want my suggestion on something, I'll be happy to give you my comments.
Really, really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
My pleasure. Good luck, sir.
Raju, one question related to this whole thing which is going on.
Right.
If someone is challenged at the port of entry, is there an option to contact the attorney? Do they give an option to contact the attorney or present in front of a judge or something like that? Or is it like you have to decide then and there that, okay, fine?
You have to decide then and there. Here is how I understand it. I could be wrong. I haven't studied this law in detail. Here is how I understand things to be. Technically, you have not yet entered the USA. You are standing at the border.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, the fundamental rights that are available to people in the United States are not available to you. Right to counsel is never a right in civil proceedings, and these are civil proceedings. So you have no right to counsel usually. As a practical matter, they will call your employer. They may or may not let you speak with lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
I think they should, but they may or may not. This is still up in the air. These procedures are very new. What they are doing right now is very new. And again, I am so disturbed by USCIS's irresponsible handling of this situation that in midstream they can change the laws and upset the lives of so many people. It's just amazing. And the reason they can get away with it is because we let them. If they had, like I said, if they applied the laws correctly, I have no problem. It's the misapplication of laws that bothers me. And here's what I predict. I predict that probably there is not going to be a lot of noise on this because there are some political issues here. Politically as well as economically, some companies might be feeling this is good for us because a lot of our competition is gone. It doesn't matter if the end client suffers. I mean, how much noise can they make or how much noise are they going to make? I have no idea. But my prediction is you won't see a lot of noise on this. Okay, I hope there is, but I don't see it so far. But we will do the best we can. To me, if you don't speak up, that means you've already consented to being treated like garbage. And you have to speak up.
No, but when you say, like, you have to speak up, it's like, see, the H-1 is like employer's petition, right? So the employees does not have any voice on this, right?
Yeah, well, employee does have the right. He's the beneficiary of the petition.
Is there any way that you can start a signed petition, something where everyone can sign and...
What are the petitions going to do? I have been involved with this for decades. Petitions don't do anything. What does help is, I'm hoping that employers will get together because primarily it is an issue that they should be addressing and they have more clout or more of a voice than individual employees might have because each employer has 10 to 100 to 200, 300 employees. Individual employee is only one, but the employer is representing 200 people. So we might have a better chance of affecting change if we got the employers involved. And like I said, that's the reason we have started a forum for employers only. Where we are suggesting, what we are doing is we are doing three or four things. One, we are teaching employers how to comply with the law. It is extremely important. A lot of times people end up neglecting the laws, not because they want to. It's because the laws are so complicated. Nobody quite understands. Even to this day, I hear from even sophisticated employers, things that are totally wrong. In investigations, I find Department of Labor itself misquoting the law all the time. Laws are very complicated. So we are trying to educate the employers. We are trying to implement a set of good practices there is an organization out of New Jersey of employers who is helping set this whole thing up. So we hope to, you know, educate people and make sure that we create a forum where people can talk with each other, compare notes, see what's going on, and make sure that the laws are not misapplied. If necessary, take the government to court, go through appeals if necessary. So hopefully we'll have a more concerted front. I was being told yesterday, somebody told me there's almost 10,000 consulting companies. If we could get 1,000 of them together, we could make a huge big difference.
Rajiv.
Yes, sir.
If my H-1 is expiring in May of this year, but I do not have a stamp and I travel to India before May and I come back on AP, is that okay?
I don't see why not.
And what about if I decide to travel after May, after my X1 expires? I don't want to go for extension, but to come back on EAD and AP.
You should be fine coming back on advanced role, but I don't know what the next target of INS is, or who's the next set of slaves they want to go after. Right now,
right,
they've gone after the H1 slaves. Next one will be advanced parole EAD slaves.
Right.
We are all slaves. I mean, think about how many people would consent to working at the same job for 9 years because green card takes 9 years and you're not supposed to get a promotion.
Right.
So if this is not slavery, I don't know what else is.
Right, right.
Oh, but you could say that, well, these guys come here because they come here voluntarily. It's like somebody asked me on one of these NPR shows a couple of years ago, and they said, well, Ajay, why should we not have you leave USA? I said, well, you know what, I'm a US citizen as much as you are. If we are going to start packing our bags, I think pretty much everybody in this country will have to pack their bags except for the Native Americans. They are the only ones to whom this land belongs. Everybody else is a visitor. You may have come here 200 years before I did, but you are still a visitor.
Right.
So, you know, I'm very disturbed. I can only tell you that this is not a good situation. It's an unnecessary situation. And look at what they did in 2007. All of a sudden, all the priority dates are current, but they're trying not to accept these cases. What the heck is going on? You know. So.
But Rajiv, this law came into effect January 8th, or was it always going on before last year?
Well, here is where the politics of the situation. Under something called the Administrative Procedures Act, no government agency can make a regulation without first preparing a draft of the regulation and then putting it up on public notice and giving people time to comment. They then have to address every comment and concern posted. This is called notice and comment.
Right.
Okay? The only time government can make laws without notice and comment is when they are only interpreting laws or
right,
they make procedural rules. So what the government is trying to do is, they are trying to, if you look at the memorandum carefully, they are trying to say this is an interpretation of existing laws, therefore it need not go through notice and comment. And my answer to that is nonsense. You have a regulation that expressly tells you what an employer-employee relationship is. It lists 5 factors, hiring, firing, remuneration, da-da-da, or any other method of control. And there's a comma in between. That means any one of those 5 should be.
Right.
If I pay you,
yep,
you are my employee. And my concern is, look, and then what they try to do is they say, well, Department of Labor says common law has to be applied and control has to be established. Well, wait a minute, you are not Department of Labor, you are USCIS.
Right.
You are 2 different agencies. Very nice of you to help Department of Labor out, but Mr. USCIS, that is not your job.
Right.
Okay.
The only reason I'm asking this question is because in August 2009, my friend applied for his extension for H1. He's working on a third-party client side, and he was asked to provide all the employee-employer relationships in August of 2009.
Well, no, wait, let me finish. So what they are trying to say is that these are existing laws, and I'm saying no, they are not. What
right,
the interpretation you are putting on is goes way beyond what the existing laws are.
Right.
Okay, so the answer is, no, sir, these laws have not existed from before. USCIS says they have. I disagree, and I would dare for them to show it to me. In fact, I can show them cases from as late as 2008 that go directly against it.
Oh, okay.
Let's say, just because you are paying the wages, look at it this way. What is USCIS's mission in this regard? Their mission is to make sure somebody is responsible for the employee's salary for their one-way ticket back home. When I, the employer, have said that I will take care of that, When I'm the employer, I'm paying your salary, and if I don't pay, I'm responsible for it. What is your problem? Why does it need to go beyond that?
Right.
Okay? There is no legal or policy reason to go beyond that. If you want to, go ahead and promulgate a new regulation. We'll make our comments. It'll give us a fair amount of opportunity to, you know, talk about what we think is wrong and right. And if we don't like it, we can still take it to court. You cannot... You know, this is an organization which, when they want to increase the fees, can pass a regulation in 3 days.
Right.
It is the same organization which passed, Congress passed AC 21, American Competitiveness in the 21st Century Act, in October 2000. Fully 10 years later, we still don't have regulations on the law. Every 6 months, they come up with a new goddamn memorandum. I really am very upset about this. They come out with a new memorandum and a new ad hoc definition of what they believe the law to be.
Okay.
Okay? So, no, sir, this is not a pre-existing law, in my opinion.
Okay.
Okay. So, let me get back to the main conference, guys. We've discussed this enough. I think we have most of the bases covered. Anybody has any questions?
Hello, Raju.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Rajit, I have one question, like, about this. Actually, my name is Satish, and
from today, and that's why he came early, 2 o'clock, so I won't.
Hello? Jagdish?
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, actually, my H-1 is going to expire in the June end.
Okay.
And suppose if I apply H-1 extension for the May, and can I continue stay in the EELs until they take a decision?
Yes, sir. You have a 240-day time to continue working also.
Oh, so working also. And actually, we are expecting a baby in the June 1st, and if it is the worst case, if I get it denied on the H-1 extension, is it possible to stay in the U.S. until my baby gets ready for the flight?
Well, they're not going to let her travel. I think it's a very humanitarian situation. They're not going to let her travel in the last, you know, few weeks of her pregnancy.
Okay.
What are you going to do? I mean, the choice is between harming the baby and disobeying the law. Of course you're going to disobey the law.
Okay.
Okay. Well, let me get back to the conference, because I want to finish up the questions that we have on.
Okay.
If you guys, if you guys want a separate conference just for the H-1, we'll do that for you, for the new memorandum. We'll do that for you.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, guys.
understand.
Okay, understand. Hello. No, I can't.
I hope they don't think I'm not working on this.
Hello?
You're going to use
them?
I told you. If you're doing that, I'll just go away. You know.
Hello?
Is that Adrian where he is? Is that
yeah.
What you can do that? And it's just funny for you.
You want me to get a little bit?
Yeah, I can hear other people, but not Rajiv. Mm-hmm. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. I think there's some disturbances coming out.
Yes.
Some cross-section.
We can hear Rajiv, I guess.
Somebody say you, I guess.
Hello, hello?
Hello?
Yeah?
Is it Rajiv?
Muted.
I think Rajiv has muted the whole conference, I guess.
Now, there are other people saying, is that Steven? Yes, nobody can hear.
Yeah.
Oh, nobody can hear what Rajiv is
saying? No.
Oh, okay.
So I guess we'll have to wait.
Hi, can everybody hear me now, guys?
Yeah.
Okay,
now we can.
I don't know what happened. Monica just pinged me, said somebody from the conference called and said you guys couldn't hear me. Okay, I'm going to put ourselves in presentation mode. Just call Monica again if there's any problem, okay? Okay, I have already answered a bunch of questions. I'll go back and do them real quickly one more time. I think they're all being recorded anyway. The first question was from Naveen about H1 benching. And I said that your wife should leave as early as she can. The employer should withdraw the H-1. Letter from the employer may or may not help. I don't think it's a big deal. And take the counselor appointment as late as you want. There is no problem. So Dave wanted to know, he wants to move to another company on 485. And I said, as long as your 485 is approvable and there is no status problem, there is no harm in moving on EAD. But make sure that you have a concrete information on, whether or not your 45 is approvable. Consult with your lawyers or consult with us separately on this issue. Okay. Joining them on EAD is not an issue, but H1 can be extended only if the 485 remains alive. If the 485 I-140 is denied, then you've got a problem. You would lose your green card. IMM2008, I answered his question also. And I said anywhere from 3 months to 1 year to get 485 approval from beginning to end. But a lot depends upon, if there are any problems with the case like security issues, etc. I was on SK2008's question, employer-employee relationship. He wanted to know what kind of documents do I need to prove this. And I said, look at my blog. I have provided a set of practical hints on what employers should be doing. Okay? And the fact that your employer is visiting every 3 months at least gives you some chance of getting approval. Very difficult for me to say how it will play out. So we'll wait and watch and see how it goes. If my H-1B extension gets denied, can I stay in USA? They should not take away your existing H-1B. They can, but they normally should not. If so, how long can I stay in USA after my H-1B expires? You cannot stay in USA after H-1B expires. Expecting baby in the last week of May, I think she just talked with me. It is very difficult for me to leave USA. I think what you should do is you should apply as late as possible. Apply in maybe your status is expiring in June. Okay, so apply in maybe third week of June or something. Because that way you have, and apply non-premium, that way you have automatic extension to continue working for 240 days. By that time, even if your case gets denied, you work for a good 7-8 months and the baby will be older and you can then leave. Okay, So apply for your H-1 as late as possible and apply it non-premium processing. Bhavita says, my husband is completing 6 year of H-1B in August. He filed for labor in ED3. Will it be possible for my husband to get H-1 extension when the labor is still pending? Yes. The law is the perm application must have been filed more than a year ago. It doesn't matter whether it is actually approved or not. My daughter is dependent on my husband's H-1. I want to transfer her to my dependent as I'm on H-1. What is the process? Just file an H-4. You can file an H-4 using form I-539. Okay, that's simple. NYUSA says, my brother came on B2, tried to convert to F1, it got denied. We'll file an MTR. Here's one problem here. Your brother could be accruing unlawful presence. Please consult with a lawyer. This can be a very big problem because he could then become subject to a 3 or 10 year bar. He's in love with a girl. She's in love with him, but she's a green card holder. She can't stay without him without even for a day. Good for him. If his status does not get approved, they are thinking of leaving the country and the girl might lose her green card. Well, not only that, he would be subject to 3 or 10 year bar. This is a very complicated situation. Make sure you talk to a lawyer. Okay? I'm not going to answer it beyond this. You need to talk with a lawyer about this. It's not something simple that I can answer. Okay? So, make sure that he's not subject to unlawful presence kind of problem. If you want to learn more about unlawful presence, there's a couple of memorandums out there. Just send me an email through the contact us form. I'll send you one of those memorandums. M. Bose says, me and my wife filed 485 on July 2007 at the Texas Service Center. We got EAD APs. Now we've got RFEs on the 485. Medicals, police certificates. So something happened with the paperwork, might have gotten lost, but they had supplied everything. That's fine. Question is, can we file for renewal? Yes, APs and EADs should be renewed, even the DRFE is pending. I don't see any problem with that. Ruchi Raj was a physician he was from India. I answered his question before the conference even started, so we were able to talk. Next question is from Stoned, green card through marriage. I filed for my green card through marriage about a couple of years ago. First, it was stuck in background checks. Then she received the notice of intent to deny. But the case is still pending. They don't know what's going on. I think, sir, you should contact your congressman's office. Contact your congressman. And if you don't know how to do that, you can just go to immigration.com, click on delays. There is a thing about delays and status checks. Click on that, and there is a small write-up there about how to contact your congressman with some links on it. Okay? You can also do search for congressman on immigration.com. Just do a search for the word congressman, single word congressman. Okay? Abu Faisal wants to know about I-130 while somebody is in removal proceedings. Mr. Faisal, I don't do deportation removal, so I have no idea. You're going to have to talk with somebody else about that. Just a question wants to know, he wants to know, what is the, for I-140, same designation but different job description, okay? My I-140 H-1 extension has same designation but different job description, causing different job code and wage level. I'm going for H-1 extension. You confirm my doubt, this might raise an issue. I discussed with my company attorney in HR. I also suggested the wage be determined hourly and if I work 35 to 36 hours. Sir, can I suggest to you that you insist that you speak with your lawyer? Because a paralegal is not a lawyer. They do not have any authority to give you legal advice. The fact that the lawyer is not addressing this issue is actually alarming. Because in our jurisdiction in Virginia, if a paralegal is giving you legal advice, they can go to prison. It's a misdemeanor. You probably won't go to prison, but definitely it's a criminal offense. Most states would have laws like that. That's practicing law without a license. Make sure you talk with your lawyer. That's the first thing I want you to do. It's not easy for me to answer your questions without a formal consultation because there are so many sub-issues here. I don't want to give you wrong advice. I want you to insist to speak with your lawyer. Okay. I'll give you your generic answers, but do not take them to be the bottom line. This is just very, very generic advice. If there is an issue in, is it likely to come out during H1 extension or during 35? Well, you know, it may never become an issue. It's very difficult for me to say what's going to happen. I can't predict the future. But they could raise an issue even at the 45 stage. If somebody sharp looks at the paperwork and says, well, does this company really have a genuine job offer? Under the same title, they have two different job descriptions, and they have two different salaries. What's going on here? So it could jeopardize both your H1 and your green card, and it could probably come up at the 485 stage. If it comes up during H1 extension, it's an easy fix just to file another H1. Well, it's very alarming because these papers are being filed under penalty of perjury. How can the employer be so casual about, oh, whatever job description is fine? You've got to have a genuine job description. Okay? Please talk with your lawyer. Make sure that you talk with them. See, people take it easy. Well, these are just immigration forms. Immigration forms are being filed under penalty of perjury. If you lie under oath or you say something carelessly, you could end up going to prison for 5 years. Okay? Please make not human your employer. Make sure that, you know, that this thing is addressed. If it comes up during 45 process with an intent to reopen and deny I-140, can you think of any way to save it? I don't know the answer to these questions. I don't know what the difference in the job descriptions is. I don't know what exactly the problem is, what the difference in wages is. A lot of things I don't know. You need to talk with your own lawyers, okay? But this is not a situation you can take lightly. Next question, Akash 007. U.S. citizen, wife is on F-1 visa, OPT. I plan to file 45 and I-130. Do I need to file any other form? Yes, 765. I-765 for employment authorization, I-131 for travel, what is called advanced parole, I-131 for advanced parole, and G-325A. You asked me a bunch of questions, and the answer to all of them is very simple, Akash. For family-based cases, just follow the instructions on the form. Look at the form I-130. Look at the form I-485 very, very carefully, I-765, I-131. Follow the instructions. Follow them completely and accurately. You cannot go wrong. Give them whatever documents they ask for, I-864, whatever they ask for, like affidavit of support. Give them those documents. Read the instructions on I-864. If you follow the instructions, get them from the INS website, uscis.gov, you will be all right. If government is missing some papers, they will send you for those papers. They will ask you for those papers. Okay? So you will be fine. Just do that. I'll be submitting marriage certificate, joint bank statement. Is that enough to... Well, yeah, that should be enough. But read the instructions and you'll have enough. Do we submit the medical exam? Yes, with the form. Do that with the form. 485 will tell you that. Since her OPT will expire while her GC is pending, does she need to maintain her F1 status by joining any other program? No. If you are a U.S. citizen and you have filed for her 485, she is in authorized period of stay. She does not need to go back to school. Next question, Raghav123Reddy. Came to USA in August 2004 on F1 visa, graduated December 2006, applied H1B. Guys, don't give me these long, long facts. Make it, you know, a little short and concise. I have no idea what all these facts are. So I continue to F1 CPT approved. Oh, okay, I think I remember reading this fact pattern. The basic idea is this, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. Reddy. The basic idea is this, that you got an H1 approval, but you never used it, okay? You got it approved on October 16, 2009. Okay, now the next step is about stamping. Do you recommend me to go to stamping in Canada? You can go to Canada if you have never been out of stamp. Or is it compulsory that I have to go to India? If I go to India, can I go to any consulate? You need to contact the consulate ahead of time. Usually they expect you to go where you actually have some ties. Either you used to live there or your family lived there. It all depends. There's no requirement that you have to go to one particular consulate if you're not living in that country. but typically they like to have some time. And you can send the consulate an email. Most of the consulates are very good about responding to emails. Okay. Again, there are some news about stamping not being successful if you are working at a third-party site. We've discussed that in great detail today. If you have any other questions, we can always try to field them in the next conference call. Guest 12, my relative works for a consulting company. Company has placed in a third-party site. How will this new employer-employee relationship affect him? He's about to get married in June. Does this make things even more complicated? I just talked about that. I think we have covered this issue already. A. Morris was arrested as a minor and wants to file for an N-400. Well, I think what you need to do is, I don't have the form in front of me. Follow the language of the form. It says, have you ever been arrested? You have to say yes, because it doesn't say, have you ever been arrested while you were an adult? Okay. So when in doubt, I prefer to give more information than less. Okay, I prefer to give more information than less. Would it ultimately affect your chances to get citizenship? I mean, what choice do you have? You can't lie about it. And it happened so long ago when you were just a child or a kid or a juvenile. It shouldn't. I mean, I think it should work out as long as you've kept yourself out of trouble since then. Parsitao wanted to know about DVs, and I said in the beginning of the call, we don't do DV cases. Next question, Arpit Shah, finished my registered nursing, how can I work in USA? Well, here's the problem. Other than, I think, North Dakota, no state in USA requires a bachelor's degree for an RN. Even an associate's degree is enough. Therefore, RNs cannot get an H-1 unless they are of some specialized kind, like managing nurse. Certain categories of nurses, emergency room nurses, some certain category of advanced nurses, I think there's four or five categories, that can get an H-1 visa. Others cannot. And I believe H-1C was extended. I don't have the information. I have not followed through with it. But you can call the U.S. customer service and maybe they'll be able to give you the information. Next question, Adapa. Okay. My apologies for the multitude of following questions. I'll try my best. There's a lot of questions here. I'll do my best and run through them. Try to make it short, please, guys. Last year in 2009 quota, I was picked up in H-1B lottery, but due to market, I did not convert to H-1. Okay. My H-1B probably might have canceled. Can I establish a business? No. You cannot work on U.S. soil when you are on H-4, whether you do online business, whether you register it in India or any other country. If you are on U.S. soil, you are not allowed to work. You should probably be exempt from the H-1B quota because you got an H-1B approval earlier. So you should be able to get an H-1 right away. Okay. Next set of questions is for her husband. He's been on H-1 past 7 years, I-140 approved. Okay, so he got a 3-year H-1 extension. What is the expected time for us to get EAD? 90 days is what they are telling me. Currently, he's working as a consultant for a small firm. He has an offer from somewhere else full-time. They are ready to process H-1B and green card. See, his I-140 is approved. Priority date has been pending 180 days. He should not have to redo the green card. If the job is similar to the green card job that he already has, he's fine. He can do AC-21 portability. Once he accepts full-time, should he get 1-year extension? No, he should always get 3-year extension. Can he still keep his priority date? I don't think he'll have to start the green card process all over again. But if the two jobs are totally different and he has to reapply the green card, he should, he will keep his priority date. That's no problem. Third question, recently we are seeing in online blogs that on H-1B visa one cannot be a consultant anymore. Well, Sumi, we've discussed this question in detail today. That should give you some idea. As long as he's got an employer who controls him, he should be fine. Archana wants to know, I'm an MBA student applying for my OPT. I've applied for H-1B but I never went to H-1B status. They canceled the H-1 after 6 months. What do I do about OPT H-1B gap? First of all, I don't think you should be subject to the quota because you did get an H-1 approval. So you should not be, you should not have any problems. Okay. And if somebody is OPT expires in May and they apply for their H-1 in April, they are allowed to continue working. That's the CAP-CAP law, as far as I remember it. Okay. So both these things could work for you: the CAP-CAP law as well as the fact that you're not subject to the quota. Rob C. Saylor, his wife 45 got denied. Evidence was not sufficient. Okay, there are too many facts here for me to keep track of. Entered USA on F-1 visa, attended university, got degree, enrolled in summer session. This is not full-time. Now, see, summer courses don't have to be full-time as far as I know. I don't see where she's out of status, but, you know, again, there may be other issues here that we haven't looked at. So I cannot answer your question whether she was out of status or not. We can appeal for the MTR. What are the chances of success? MTRs work all the time. I don't know why they denied the application, and, you know, you may want to talk with her lawyers and your lawyers and figure out exactly what they are saying. If I have to apply through you, what is the fees? I am very sorry. I don't know what our fees are. What you're going to have to do is, most of our fees, whatever we normally do a lot, you can see on our website. If you go to immigration.com, on the top there is a panel that says about us. You click on that, it gives you our fees. Everything is listed. Also on the right-hand side of the homepage, there's a panel that has a direct link to our fees. But I don't think the MTR fees are listed there. What you can do is you can send an email, send a mail through the contact us form on immigration.com and just say that, you know, I would like to have a consultation about my wife's MTR. And, you know, what do you charge for an MTR for a 485? They should be able to give you an estimate. Okay? I can't really get into the details because there are so many of them and I would need to talk with her and with you. Let us just, if you already have a lawyer, talk with them. This is not rocket science. They should be able to fix it for you if it is a mistaken denial. Next question, Cypher Green Card. Child is age 16 in high school, wants to apply for F-1. Okay. Right now he's H-4, 45 case is denied. Huh. Can he get F-1? Well, he can, theoretically at least, but practically they could say, well, he's exhibited immigrant intent because he filed 485. I think it's worth a try. This is regarding my H-1. If I move to other projects in different states, I understand that you only submit new LCA. No, sir. If it's a different state, you probably need to amend the H-1, not just the LCA. I just want to know, per this new memo, any change in this process. Well, sir, you got the process wrong. So on top of that, the new memo talks about control by the employer. So that's what is going on here. But you have to file for an H-1 amendment if you move beyond normal commuting distance of the area where you were working. If you were working within that area, you can do an LCA and you'll be okay. Next question, Andy 1920 wants to know, I have a question about my green card. I was with a consulting company, applied for my green card in May 2007. EB2. I came across an opportunity. I was rolled off from the project. See, when you are taken off the project, it raises an issue whether there is a green card permanent job available for you. Okay, that is the biggest issue here. So if you go to another employer, you might as well start a new green card all over again. You can certainly try applying for an 485 and EAD through them also, but you should also start a new green card process. Is there a minimum time period during which I need to work for an employer? You should read our blog. On my blog, this issue has been dealt with, that after my green card is obtained, how long do I have to work for the employer? how soon does the employment with the earlier employer have to start? There's no time period. I would say commercially reasonable time period, maybe a month, 2 months, 3 months. Any additional care that can be taken at the time of filing for 45, I just think it will be a bad idea for you not to file a second green card. What you should do is file a second green card and transfer your priority date to the new employer's case. Gene 2005 wants to know what is the definition of same or similar for AC21. We have dealt with this issue on my blog. Please read there. In my view, it has never been defined. The closer you are to same, the better off you are. Okay. You cannot be on bench. That's illegal. Remember that if you are an H1 on bench, that can be a problem. When you go from being a business systems analyst to from a software engineer to business systems analyst, etc., it can create complications. There are so many things that we don't really know about this. We are all guessing. They have never really defined what similar is. Same we all know. So the closer you are to same, the better off you are. Spouse status, I'm filing for N-400, spouse overstayed on B-2. Is this going to be a problem? Well, first of all, you don't have a choice. If they ask you a question, you have to tell it truthfully. So you have to put it down. They could technically deport you, but normally spouses of U.S. citizens, you should not have that much of a difficulty. Okay? You know that if she doesn't travel outside USA, you can get her green card here once you become a U.S. citizen. Would they create a problem in the meantime? I don't think so, but you can talk with a lawyer who does deportations and exclusions, what is called removals. Maybe they can guide you better on that. Devin Cal, girlfriend applied for her waiver, that's the J-1 waiver, mid-August, got the favorable recommendation. What visa options does she have? See, until she gets her waiver, she does not have any options. She will have, she can't do adjustment of status, change of status within USA. She'll have to go outside USA. Okay. She will have to leave. I do not know of any way to keep her here within USA. She can, of course, go outside USA, apply for a tourist visa or an F1 visa, and come back. She cannot get an H1 or an L1, and she cannot get change of status within USA. When you have a J1, 212E requirement, three things you can't do. You cannot change status within USA, as far as I know. Could you do it as spouse of a U.S. citizen? I don't think so. But, you know, have it double-checked. That part I'm not clear about. But normally you can't do change of status. You cannot get H1. You cannot get L1. You cannot get green card. Okay? So that's where things stand. Dave had an additional question. He said, can she get work authorization? Yeah. She can get work authorization only if her 485 is filed. And 485 can only be filed if her waiver is taken care of. So it looks like she may have to go outside USA for a little while. She could stay here illegally if she wants to. I would certainly not recommend it. I just don't like telling people to stay illegally. But spouses of U.S. citizens, even if they fall into unlawful presence, they can get adjustment of status within USA. I certainly think it forecloses certain options. What if she doesn't want to get married to you tomorrow? Then she would be stuck. So, I mean, just a matter of personal opinion. I usually don't advise people to fall out of status. There was one more question that Monica had forwarded to me from somebody. Let me see, what was that question? Questions from Raj. Me and my wife have EAD with valid H1 and H4 status. 45 pending, I-140 approved. Current company is not doing very well, planning to move to another company, but the salary offered is less. Will that be an issue for AC21? So that's a difficult question to answer. How much lesser? Is it a different area? Is the job otherwise similar? So a lot depends. Salary is not the only thing we look at. Wife is on EAD. She's planning to use it by working part-time. Will she be affected by the AC21? No, she will not be. I don't see what effect she could have. But of course, whatever happens to you happens to her automatically. So if for some reason you get denied, she will also get denied. Okay? I've covered all the questions, folks. I have about 10-15 minutes more before I have to run. So I'll open the conference only to those questions that have a follow-up here. So if you have posted, ask me follow-up questions. I will not be able to take new questions. Just a second. Press star 6 to speak with me, please. Star 6.
Rajiv?
Yes, sir.
This is
Rajiv.
The first question.
Okay, what is the question, sir?
When to date the withdrawal? Is there a particular date that the employer needs to put in?
They can only withdraw them effective the date they file the withdrawal. They can't ban them.
Okay, so we just put the current date on it, and is there a format drawing or just a
just a simple letter to INS, we hereby withdraw the attached approved H1.
Okay, and she doesn't, I guess she doesn't need a formal termination letter?
No, she doesn't.
Oh, okay. The reason I got a little apprehensive here to talk about H1 problems is I filed for H1 seventh year extension and did a premium, and I was hoping I got the result and then she could go to the consulate and get a 3-year extension. But I don't know how, and I'm not in a consulting company. I've got a, I've been with the employer. I don't know how, is it affecting other cases or?
No. If you are in working in-house, you should be fine. This memo has no effect on you.
Okay.
Rajiv.
Hi, Rajiv.
Thanks,
Rajiv. What was it you were talking about, that penalty of perjury for the job description for 5 years?
See, I'm very, very concerned when lawyers and employers change job descriptions according to the need of the moment instead of stating the truth. Whatever the true job description is, that is what should be stated. Because the forms are filed under penalty of perjury. That's what I'm saying.
So what is the penalty?
You can go to prison for 5 years.
Oh, okay.
Not you, but whoever signs that form, will be employer.
Okay.
Hello, Rajiv.
Yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Yes, Rajiv. I was wondering. Mine is Arappa, and I was wondering, can I do it in eBay, like H4?
You see, you cannot do any income generating activity in the United States. I mean, you could technically. The only thing I can think of that you could do is if you, my guess, if you were to invest in stocks. But even there, you can't do day trading. As long as you just put the money as a passive investor and let it be, I think that should be okay. But anything beyond that would probably be a violation of H4 status. We have some information on volunteering on H4.
Okay.
If you go to my blog and just do a search for volunteer, you should be able to come up with that.
What if I get my EAD? Then
there's no problem. You can do whatever you want.
Okay, and the other question was, can I register from India and then have a status page here and connect, given
that is no problem at all.
Okay.
That is not a question of immigration law. That's a question of business law.
Okay.
We can't really answer that for you because business law is unique to every state. But generally speaking, immigration law has no problem with you, or international law would have no problem with you having an office in India and doing business in USA.
Oh, okay. And the other thing is, I'm picked up for H1 last year, but I'm, he canceled my H1, so I was wondering, you were talking about exempt quota. How good is that? Like, do I have to work in a garment organization to get an H1 approved?
You got your H1 approval earlier, right?
Yes, I did. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, once you have an H1 approval, you can work for any employer. You got your H1 through a private employer, right?
Yeah, private, but then I didn't get it stamped.
You don't have to.
So
you just only have to have it approved once.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so you should not be subject to the quota.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Anybody else?
Thank you.
You're welcome. Anybody else? Very good. I appreciate your time. Thank you very much, and I'll talk with you maybe in a couple of weeks. Hey, Rajiv. Hello? Hey, Rajiv. Hello? Yes?
Rajiv, this is June 2005.
Uh-huh.
And I had a question about EAD and AC21.
Uh-huh.
And I have provided the occupation codes in my query.
I don't know the answer to that question. Nobody does, sir. I just answered that question as best as I could, which is nobody really knows what similar means. We know what same means. Okay.
So
same, I really don't know the answer to your question. Nobody does. I have seen lawyers say, as long as you are in the same basic 3-digit code, you're fine. I don't think so. But we've never seen anything from INS that tells us exactly what they are looking for.
Oh, okay. Okay, so this is all how the person, evaluates it. whoever yes. officer will...
What, it is the closer you are to same, the better off you are. And I'm not concerned about the title. I'm concerned about the job description.
Right.
If the job description is same or similar, you are fine. A little bit of variation in title is not a problem, because in IT industry, titles are very loose anyway.
Yeah, right. So, okay. I mean, I continue working in IT, and my new role will also be very much, I mean, it needs all the skills that I need in my...
Well, I am on your side. You don't need to convince me. You need to convince INF. Okay, I am on your side. If it was up to me, I would say case approved.
Okay.
But you need to, I think you should have these two job descriptions compared by your lawyers. Make sure that they feel comfortable with them, only then go forward.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that will be a good point. Yep.
Yeah, because
Logic.
These are very fact-bound questions. And I'll tell you something. Rule of thumb. What is a programmer? Programmer is somebody who codes, develops tests. Who's a software?
Right.
No, analyst? Analyst is somebody who deals with the users and gets the requirements and requisitions for the software, gets functional specifications prepared for a flowchart. Who is software engineer? Software engineer does all of these things. On top of that, he does system architecture, or he does software engineering design. That is the broad difference in the three categories. Okay. So if, for example, even though they call you a business analyst, but you have design responsibilities, then you are not really a business analyst. You are a software engineer.
Yeah. So.
Right. So you really need to show it to a lawyer who understands how this process works, who understands the job description, and who understands the law. Go ahead and show it to them, and get their opinion. Let's see what they say.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah. All right, folks.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck. Anybody else?
Rajiv, I have a follow-up question.
Okay.
Let's say somebody does first master's and then does a second master's, but before finishing the second master's, gets an H-1 approved and drops the courses. Does he get out of status?
No, of course not.
Okay.
They were maintaining F-1 status till they got their H-1, then they started working on H-1.
Okay, yeah, that's it. Thank you.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Thanks.
All right, folks. It's been good talking with you. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.